So welcome, Stephanie.
Hi.
Hi. I'm Ruth Beecher, and today is Saturday, the first day of May, 2000, no, what is it? 2021, 2021. Welcome to our Unagonaguna interview. And would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Stephanie Blythman. I'm 30 years old. I was born in Mount Carmel Hospital in Dublin, and I grew up in Glen of the Downs, County Wicklow, which is just outside Delgany and Greystones. And I lived there at home until I was about 25, and then I moved over to the UK. I went to school in Delgany, primary school in Delgany, and then I went to secondary school in St Andrew's College in Booterstown, County Dublin. I've got two younger brothers. It's about 2.5 years between me and my next brother, and then 5 years between myself and my youngest brother. I'm quite close with my parents and my brothers. They all still live back in Ireland. I work as a kind of in costume for film and TV, sometimes theatre, but mostly film and TV the past few years. And yeah, I went to university in Trinity College Dublin. I did my BA there in drama studies and French. And then after that, I did training in costume design and makeup at Inchicore College in Dublin as well. Worked for a few years after that, before moving over here. And then after having worked, I think I'd lived here for about a year or so, and then I went back and did my master's in the history of design at the Royal College of Art and the Victoria and Albert Museum, and graduated that in 2018. And since then, I've just been working in costume, as I said.
That's brilliant. I can't wait to hear more about all of that. Sounds fascinating and how you got into that. And so if I was to take you back to your 15th year, can you tell me what's your most, I suppose, what memory pops to the top of your mind about that, about being 15? So you would have been in Wicklow then.
Yes, in secondary school in St Andrews. I suppose first thing that happened when I was 15, because my birthday is in June. I'm born the 4th of June, 1990. The first thing that happened would have been my junior cert, doing exams, turned 15 and immediately doing a load of exams. So yeah, I guess that would be the first thing. I've
How
just
was
finished.
that?
Yeah, it was all right. I was doing an awful lot of subjects, because with and my mum had me actually doing music on top of all of the other ones, which I really resented that she made me do that. I think if maybe it had been my choice, then I might have been worked harder at it. But because it was something that she kind of just like, oh well, you're doing this.
Why was that? Why was that, Steph?
Well, I was I think she thought it would be a good kind of subject, that I would be kind of an easy subject for me to do, because I'd been doing piano. I started learning the piano when I was probably about 7 or 8. So I think she thought maybe it would complement that, and she thought that maybe I should have picked it as my subjects, one of my subjects, when I was starting secondary school. But the way my secondary school kind of offered the kind of elective subjects, music would have clashed with home economics, which I had picked. So you kind of you had your you have your compulsory subjects, so kind of English, Irish, mathematics, and then CSPE, which is civics, social and political studies. You kind of learn about how to be a good citizen, kind of how kind of the voting system works in Ireland, about kind of human rights, all of that kind of stuff. And then you've got you had to learn a language. So I chose French for that. And then, yeah, you could do science, geography, history. And then there's, you kind of had two sort of elective subjects after that. So I'd picked classical studies for one, and then home economics for the other. But yeah, Mum just thought I should do music.
And so thanks, Mum. Like, I need something extra. Like, Ireland doesn't make it hard enough at that age. You know, yeah, you have exactly. All those subjects, don't you?
Yeah, because, you know, I was having to do, because my school, the way that they kind of, as well as we had to do PE during school hours, but we also, as presumably is their kind of notion of a team building or bonding or kind of whatever, we had to do a team sport. So the options were either doing hockey or basketball. I've never been particularly keen at throwing balls or having them being thrown at me, so I went with hockey, but it's really not, wasn't my favorite sport.
What kind of a school was it? Was it a church kind of, I don't know, here they call it public private or whatever, you know, was it
it's a private
school? Private.
Yeah, it's a private school. It's kind of a funny, they're an international school. They operate as an international school. It had originally been Presbyterian. So the way my dad always described it was that it was a Presbyterian or a multi-denominational with a Presbyterian ethos. Mm-hmm. So like he and my uncles went there and my granddad as well.
So you were continuing the family tradition.
Yes, yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. It was kind of funny. I had some of the same teachers as he had, that they were still knocking around. Yeah, and I remember.
Were you Presbyterian or?
Yes, yeah. I'm Presbyterian. Like my dad is. My mum's Catholic.
Right.
But yeah, we were raised Presbyterian. I think Mum said that it was kind of she felt it was more important to my dad that we were Presbyterian than it was to her that we'd be Catholic. But the only caveat to that was that if we were being christened and Presbyterian and it mattered that much to him, then we were going to go to church every Sunday. So we did for kind of probably until I was about 10. But then it was actually because my brothers at that point were kind of 7, 8, so they'd have been getting more into sort of soccer and kind of joining, they were like kind of part of soccer clubs, and a lot of those kind of sports they tend to have their matches on Sunday mornings, so that clashed and we just kind of gradually kind of fell out of the habit and ended up just kind of you know, Christmas, Easter, maybe one or two other kind of important days.
Was there a big community of Presbyterians where you lived in Wicklow?
Yeah, there's a Presbyterian church in Greystones, which is where we went. My grandparents went there. My granny, she still would. She's not as religious as my granddad would have been, quite much more devout, I think. But yeah, so my granny would still go there. And so that's where we went. And yeah, I think there's another Presbyterian church down in Arklow, which is a town a little bit further south. So yeah, there's kind of a relatively kind of okay. I think it's quite a Protestant kind of area. I know the village of Delgany, it is very much kind of tied into, there was a French Huguenot family that they owned kind of an estate around there, kind of the Latouches. So there's still kind of various kind of landmarks. There was kind of there used to be a hotel called the Latouche Hotel in Greystones. And so I think there is quite a a strong kind of Protestant kind of.
So French Protestants, the history, rather than Scottish Presbyterians, for example.
Yeah, yeah. So kind of the primary school I went to was Church of Ireland, which would be kind of Church of England, but they don't call it that anymore over there. But it's the same thing. So yeah, there's quite.
So I'm a daughter of a mixed marriage. Mother was Church of Ireland, and my father is, well, my mother is Church of Ireland, and my father's Catholic. So different. A different mix, but I was wondering because one of my friends, her family is from Scottish Presbyterians in Cork, so it's interesting, isn't it? But we did have the Huguenots in Cork as well, obviously. It seems like there were more Scottish Presbyterians. I don't know. That's my ignorance showing now. It's interesting.
Isn't it? I think it's I think the Presbyterian Church in Ireland seems to be quite linked to Northern Ireland. I think that's where kind of the base for kind of the Republic of Ireland Presbyterian Church kind of seems to come from, because quite a lot of the ministers would have been Northern Irish. Certainly the minister when I was growing up, Jim, he was Northern Irish, and his wife was as well. So I think there's quite that kind of Northern Irish link with the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, more so I think than the Scottish.
And were you devout? Were you a religious young girl, or?
Not particularly, but I think that's probably as a result of my dad. Like he's quite irreverent, and maybe in part because, you know, my mum isn't Presbyterian, that she's Catholic. And then obviously I was going to Church of Ireland school, and then I did Brownies, kind of like a girl guides, which is very kind of linked to the Church of Ireland as well. And I did Girls Brigade for a while, which again is quite linked. So I think perhaps just kind of in being kind of exposed to kind of all of these different sort of versions, as well as kind of, as I said, my dad's quite irreverent when it comes to religion and all of that. And they were,
because the stereotype is kind of a quite a dour kind of stern Presbyterianism, isn't it? So your dad sounds like the opposite to that.
Yes, yeah. He's very much a bit of a joker, my dad. He kind of very, very mischievous. I mean, you know, my mom is as well, I think, to a certain extent. She kind of, I think she's, people don't necessarily realize that about her, but kind of having grown up with the pair of them and having them like kind of loving to kind of have a laugh at our expense. They kind of both like a laugh. She'd take religion a little bit more seriously. She gets very annoyed with him. When we kind of visit, say, churches when we're away on holidays, and he'd be joking around, and she gets quite annoyed with him for that. I think they always said that they were less concerned with having us be kind of hugely religious, and more that my dad kind of he put it that they wanted us to have Christian values and kind of to live a good, clean life. So it was less about getting caught up in kind of the going to church and being seen at church and doing all of these things and being seen to do all of these things, and more about kind of instilling the kind of the values of do unto others as they would have do unto you, and that sort of thing.
And how much of an issue, or was it an issue, the fact that they were in a mixed marriage? Was that unusual in Wicklow at the time, or?
I don't know. I don't think that it really kind of, I kind of have noticed. I think, it wasn't really a thing. Certainly. It never really struck me as kind of anything that that was an issue. Like the only kind of, in terms of religion, kind of the only thing that like I would have noticed kind of growing up was that obviously being Presbyterian, we don't do kind of like First Holy Communion and stuff. So kind of when all of my kind of classmates, a lot of them would have been Catholic and they'd have been doing that when we were about kind of 7 or 8 or whatever age that happens. And so kind of they're going off and doing all of that. And I very much, you know, wasn't. So I think that would be more of a standout kind of thing for me. Yeah. Mm. That kind of side of things. But in terms of my parents being in a mixed marriage, no, it wasn't. But I don't know, maybe that's like my family is quite casual when it comes to religion. Like I know my granddad on my dad's side, like while he was kind of Presbyterian, I know his parents, I think they started out actually as Methodist. Mm. But they were from Leeds, and they moved over kind of I think around the time they got married to Dublin, and they were originally Methodist, and then there was something about the church that it had to close or something, presumably the next nearest Methodist church in like Ireland in the kind of the 1930s was too far for them to be bothering to go every Sunday. Mm. with the kids. So they went, I think maybe they went to Church of Ireland first, and then I think that church closed. Mm-hmm. down, or maybe it didn't suit them. But anyway, they ended up going to the Presbyterian one because they kind of felt that a church was a church. Mm-hmm. And it kind of had similar, it has, I think Methodist and Presbyterian, they kind of have similar-ish sort of values. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think kind of maybe the fact that that kind of casual, not casual, but kind of that sort of openness to there being other ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm. Before we go back to your school then, in terms of the kind of two sides of the family, like your mum's Catholic side and your dad's Presbyterian side, were they very different? Would you not notice, or culturally?
I suppose in a way they are quite different in the sense that my mum's side, my granddad Cooney, and he was a farmer. So she grew up in Westmeath, on a farm until she went to secondary school, and then she went off to boarding school. And so in that sense, I suppose that, whereas my dad's side would be, I think, much more kind of urban, in that kind of urban kind of setting. They were kind of tradespeople. My great granddad Blytheman, he owned an industrial sewing machine factory in Dublin, and I think they supplied to all the clothing manufacturing factories in Ireland until obviously that industry moved to Asia.
Yeah,
it was cheaper. But that's, yeah, so he was kind of in that. And my granny, my granny Blytheman, her father was actually, he joined the British Army during World War One. He was a dispatch rider, and then after that he went into sales. I think he was kind of a salesman, or kind of worked in something to do with that. I suppose in that sense there is kind of a difference.
It's an urban rural kind of difference, rather than a Catholic Presbyterian type difference, maybe.
Yes, yeah. I think I wouldn't necessarily kind of know my mum's side as well, partially because they lived in Westmeath, and so that, you know, at the time, you know, when I was growing up, it was a little bit more of a trek to.
How far was it to Westmeath from where you were in Wicklow?
It would have probably been like, if we were going down, like nowadays, like there's motorways and everything. So it's kind of, you could go down and for like, and have kind of lunch or whatever for Sunday lunch. If you wanted, it would only kind of maybe take kind of a couple of hours to get down there. But, you know, back in the 90s, you know, when I was growing up, like that was before the M50. Maybe they were only building it at the time, but it would have, I think if we were going down, we'd have probably been going down for the weekend.
Right. It wasn't a day trip, like it was a good old drive. Really,
I think, you know, well, I suppose with three kids, the last thing you want is to be arguing them into a car in the morning at whatever time to get down in time for lunch and then kind of driving
head
them back,
straight back
in the afternoon, in the evening or whatever.
So you didn't see them as much?
No, we wouldn't have. Whereas my, as I said, you know, my dad's parents kind of live about kind of a 15-minute drive from us, and we went to the same church, so I'd have seen them a lot more. Mm-hmm. And his younger brother, my uncle and his family, I mean, they didn't live as close to us and they went to a different church. They lived in Dublin, but I think I'd have seen them a lot more than my Cooney cousins.
Mm-hmm. And how did your mum and dad meet? From their two different worlds,
as far as I know, well, they both work in insurance. They run their own insurance brokering business together. So they were both working. I don't know if they were both working for one of the Hibernian or one of those companies at the time, but I think there was something that they had mutual friends and they were all going down to Cork or Kerry or somewhere, and my dad was doing the driving, and so that's how they met. And then when they came back, when they got back, dad must have obviously liked mum, but rather than just asking her out, he rang her up and asked to meet her on the pretext of getting petrol money out of her, I think.
Brilliant. How romantic.
He's really just one of the least romantic people I know, I think. So obviously she was very annoyed by this, I think. But anyway, she said yes, and then my dad, being my dad, he hadn't organized anything. So they ended up driving around South Dublin, I think, for a while, and that evening, until they found what's actually a very nice restaurant, quite an expensive kind of seafood restaurant. It's still, I think it's still there. I think it's the Lobster Pot in kind of, I think it's must be around Donnybrook or around that area, or Bulls Bridge, I think. So they ended up going there for their first date, and I don't think they've ever been back, but that's kind of the family joke, that he took her to a very nice restaurant on their first date, but by accident.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm going to take you back to school then, and just to pick up on something, you said you picked for your elective subjects for your junior cert, classical civilizations and home economics. Quite the contrast.
I always quite liked when I was a kid, I was very, very into history. I still am. I would have been reading kind of Greek and Roman myths, and I was quite into, I think, Vikings for a while. And I think just the idea that I could do that as a subject in school really appealed to me, so I picked that. And then home economics, I think I just like the idea of a class where I'd be learning to cook and learning to sew. I used to, when I was small, get given a lot of kind of kits of like
craft kits,
stitching kits.
Love those.
And kind of making kind of creative kind of kits and stuff. So I used to do quite a lot of cross stitching when I was a child. I think that just kind of, it appealed to me in that sense. I was kind of torn, I think, between doing home economics and doing art, because I used to love drawing as well, but I think I don't know, maybe in my head I just thought like, oh sure, I draw anyway in my spare time, what do I need to do art for. I did end up doing art for my leaving cert,
You had the history and the kind of textiles there already in your elective subjects for your junior cert. The future was mapped out in a way.
Kind of.
And was it a mixed school then?
Yes. Yeah. Mixed schools all the way.
How did you find that?
Yeah, I liked it. I suppose I was used to it. I had brothers, and through whatever kind of twist of fate, like my parents, their friends, they mostly had sons who were my age. So I kind of ended up spending a lot of whenever that we kind of had their kind of friends over. I was kind of tearing around the garden with the boys, kind of climbing trees and hide and seek and all of that. I liked being a, I found it difficult, I think, particularly kind of in my early teens, kind of relating to girls, maybe because I was kind of used to having brothers. So, I didn't have any sisters, and my female cousins were kind of mostly kind of either older or younger than me. As I said, like kind of most of the sort of incidental playmates that I had were boys. Like I did have my best friend he's since come out as trans, so that's I don't know if I can really count him as a female best friend anymore, because obviously it's definitely something that's kind of been there since childhood. But I think I did have kind of female friends, but I kind of usually only would have only had like maybe as a child like maybe one kind of best friend at a time, like a wider group of female friends. That's something that I think that's really only kind of come as I've got older, which I really enjoy.
So what age were you when you bring a friend from primary through to secondary school with you, or did you have to reinvent yourself in your secondary school?
No, there was a few of us that went from primary school through to secondary school. So there was it was one of those kind of awkward, I sort of switched, ended up just, as you kind of do, where like my best friend from primary school, Nate, who I'm still friends with, that he went to a different school. Whereas there was another girl that I was kind of relatively good friends with in primary school, but we kind of became best friends when we went to secondary school. And so in that sense, kind of, I had her, and then one of the boys from my primary school who came through with us. He was actually in my, because our year was, there was about 150 of us in our year in secondary school, and we were all kind of divided up into kind of separate forms, but he was in my form, so I kind of had somebody familiar there. It was kind of I didn't have to kind of completely reinvent myself in that sense. I had her until kind of the end of second year, when we ended up having a huge fight. And basically after that we never spoke again.
It happens to so many people.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things that I never really have been particularly interested in kind of being part of the cool crowd and kind of pandering to all of that I just wasn't cool in any way in secondary school. And I think and certainly not at kind of 13, 14, I was just finding it very difficult to kind of fit in. And but I think she was much more interested in kind of being invited to the parties and all of that kind of thing. But she was also kind of a bit flighty, that for my part, that she's kind of one of those people who even if she made plans with you, if something better came along, she'd drop them and go and do the better, the more interesting things. So I think I was finding that frustrating, and wasn't able to necessarily kind of vent to her. So maybe I think I was probably venting to like some of our other friends, and then she was having a go at me for bitching about her behind my back, her back, and I was having a go at her for just being a flake. And so we had a massive fight on kind of sports day at the end of second year in front of all of our friends. And then a few of the girls kind of took me off because I was very upset, and kind of, and then yeah, they kind of became my core mm-hmm. friends, and I'm still, well, one of them is now my best friend, Jenna, and then we're still quite close to one of the other girls, Sibel, and we kind of hung out for the rest of school, and then we still keep in touch.
And so your social life when you were 15, was that sort of centered around your school friends and around school, or?
Yeah, it would have been, yeah. By that stage, kind of 15, I think, yeah, Jenna and I would have been kind of best friends by, or kind of heading towards being best friends by that stage. So it was mostly kind of our kind of little gang of four, myself and Jenna and Sibel and Rosa, and sometimes there was another girl called Hannah, and then there was another girl, Kate, who used to kind of hang about with us, so that was kind of our kind of little social circle, I suppose, that we'd have going to the cinema or hanging out at each other's houses and that.
Mm-hmm. So was that what you did? Go to the cinema and
Yeah, mostly. I think, yeah, we just kind of, that was our sort of our kind of world, like kind of, there was, we'd go, Jenna lived in Dunleary, so, and that was kind of the hangout spot for all the teens in who went to kind of the schools in and around kind of South Dublin, like our school, and then like Black Rock and kind of Fox Rock and the ones in Dorky as well. It was, I think, because it was, I presume, like parents kind of saw it as like a relatively safe, like it's kind of urban, but like there was a shopping center there, there was a cinema there, so it was kind of allowing us a little bit of freedom without actually kind of, you know,
going into Dublin city center,
which you know, at the age of kind of maybe 13-14, maybe they thought it was too far. And that kind of all we needed was Dunleary. So yeah, we kind of spent kind of a lot of time there, and then I think that's kind of in and around, like around each other's houses, kind of having film nights and kind of sometimes sleepovers or
Mm-hmm. And so. Did you know what would have been your main interest around, you know, if we're talking now 15 16 17 18, were you into, you, I think you said not team sports, but you know, music, theater, film, or boys? What was the what were you all interested in? What were you specifically interested in?
I was a big reader, reading, drawing, I think, yeah, that's kind of what, like, I think those would be kind of the two things.
And did you spend a lot of time at home doing that then?
Yeah, we used to, I think it still exists, there's this site called Deviant Art, and I know that, like, certainly Jenna and Rosa and I, we would, and Nate, because I was properly back in touch with Nate at that stage, and he's very artistic, and has kind of been working on a graphic novel for a very long time now. But yeah, we would all be kind of doing our own kind of drawing and kind of artwork in our spare time, and then we'd kind of post it up onto this site.
Amazing.
And be kind of commenting on it in each other's profiles. And so kind of there, and then there was another site called Gaia Online, which is kind of very, we were all very into kind of anime and Japanese kind of comics and stuff, so that was, we were, yeah,
is that
were,
like manga?
Yeah, yeah, so it's kind of, I think, like, yeah, like kind of manga anime. I think manga is like the comics and then anime is the cartoon, like the TV kind of film cartoon.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the difference.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were all very kind of into that, and I think that would have very much influenced what we were drawing as well, and the way we were drawing. So we were doing kind of our drawings and posting them on this DeviantArt website, and then also kind of on this Gaia Online, which was kind of a forums, but you had your little avatar and you could kind of take it on adventures within, like there was kind of a little sort of a kind of an interactive world, I guess.
What year are we in now, Steph?
So that would have been, so what, I was 15 to 2015, so this would have been kind of 2015 to kind of 2016, 17, 18.
Yeah.
And yes, that was kind of our kind of world, and kind of engaging in kind of the chat forums on there with kind of various, yeah, there's like, you could do like, just, yeah, that you ended up like on in kind of various conversations with like other people. I know like Jenna was in chats about like Formula One and that, because she was really into that, and you can, yeah, or you kind of did role-playing forums where you kind of went off, took your character or your avatar or whatever off on adventures with the other people in the forums and stuff. So yeah, I think that was kind of, and then yeah, so we were on that kind of, and we'd interact with each other on that as well.
Yeah, as so well there was as like other people, and yeah.
Yeah, and on the DeviantArt, and then also MSN Messenger kind of really kind of was kicking off then around then as well. So we'd be kind of having group chats on MSN as well.
And the people that you met on the DeviantArt that weren't in your little circle of 4 to 6, would you ever meet those people in real life?
Not DeviantArt. I know with Gaia, Nate met his first boyfriend on Gaia, who was from Michigan.
Wow.
And they were kind of long distance kind of for quite a long time, and then they eventually met up in real life. And then I think I met, like, there was a friend of mine that I met through Bebo of all places. Mm-hmm. and yeah, I met up with him once or twice. And then that kind of faded. But yeah, I think some people did. Like I don't think I ever really kind of engaged in kind of the digital world to such an extent that it became kind of more real to me than the real world. I think I was quite content with the mm-hmm. kind of friends I had, because I had that kind of core group of friends in real life. I didn't. Mm-hmm.
And would you describe yourself as like a happy 15, 16, 17 year old? Were you, you know, yeah, what, yeah, what was, I think, yeah.
I think I was pretty happy, kind of still probably awkward and uncomfortable and trying to figure out how to be, but yeah, I think I was, you know, I was happy. I had friends, you know, I was doing well in school,
And so what was the next big thing that you can remember from those teenage years, do you think?
Well, I suppose there's my first boyfriend, which ended disastrously. But yeah, I think I'd first met him at the end of fourth year in school, for the end of transition year. I was doing work experience.
The transition year is kind of a year out from study where you do work experience and that sort of thing.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of So that kind of comes after the junior cert. You kind of go first to third year in secondary school, and then at the end of third year you do junior cert, and then there's transition year. Some schools, I think, allow you to skip it. Mine didn't. Personally, having met people, kind of, there was a few people in who came into our year in fifth year who had skipped transition year, and for me, I did notice the difference in terms of maturity. I suppose they were that year younger than the rest of us. Mm-hmm. But also just like, even if we were all bored out of our trees at some points during transition year, because it's a bit of a, you're not really working towards anything in it. Mm-hmm. You're just kind of trying different things out and stuff. I think it did kind of give people a time to sort of relax and just figure themselves out a little. And not without the kind of that external pressure of kind of exams looming and having to work, and kind of we were just sort of, and they mixed up the kind of the classes a lot more, so we were kind of thrown into classes with people we hadn't been in class with before, and we were trying different things, and I think it did just offer kind of a year where everyone kind of egos sort of calmed down a bit, and then by the time we got to fifth year, everyone was a little bit more maybe centered and kind of a little bit less kind of a little bit less concerned with that kind of whole kind of jockeying for position and kind of the social hierarchy kind of thing. Whereas I felt that kind of some of the people who'd not done transition year, they weren't quite there, that they were kind of a little bit more kind of concerned with that kind of stuff, which, you know, some people are, like, some people are for their whole lives, but yeah, I did feel like there was kind of a growing up in that year. Mm-hmm. The end of transition year, we had kind of our last 2 weeks of school were spent doing kind of 2 weeks of work experience. So I did it with the ARC, which is a children's cultural centre in Temple Bar in Dublin. They do kind of arts programmes, like, so they have like theatre shows sometimes, or like art exhibitions, or and they do kind of workshops that will be kind of themed around whatever they have on at the time. So I was volunteering with them, and there was another boy doing work experience there at the same time. I, for whatever reason, he didn't have a mobile phone, so he was using me as a go-between to arrange to meet with his friend, who then I kind of started talking to this friend, Brian, for of my own kind of volition, and then we kind of became friends, and we were sort of, I suppose we were probably chatting kind of maybe for about kind of 6 months, and then it's funny kind of looking back, like, I wonder like how much of me kind of, because it was definitely me that kind of pushed for kind of becoming kind of boyfriend girlfriend sort of thing. And I suppose by that stage I was 16, and I do wonder kind of maybe how much of that kind of impetus in kind of forcing the issue was through my kind of embarrassment, I suppose, at like being 16, and I'd never kissed anyone, never been kissed, never had a boyfriend. I wonder how much of it was kind of my kind of self-consciousness about that. He was nice enough, but like, he was a terrible, terrible boyfriend, and he definitely, in that, you know, that Sex and the City kind of, he's just not that into you, very much, you know, he'd go AWOL for weeks on end and not answer text messages and always kind of put everything back on me and like, oh, but like, what do you want? And so that kind of was most of fifth and sixth year.
So it went on for quite a bit then.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly longer. I would never put up with that now. But you know, when you're a teenager, you're an idiot. And yeah, definitely. It left me feeling very kind of insecure and kind of, I remember like the end of it was just, I was wrecked by the end of it. Just exhausted and kind of, I mean, it came at a really, like, there was a whole load of things that happened kind of at the same time. Cause, we'd finished our leaving cert, kind of 2018, kind of June 2018. And then, well, essentially he just kind of ignored me for the whole summer. And then kind of around September, it would have been like a few weeks before we were kind of due to start college. My friend's dad died very suddenly. And I remember, I think I was ringing him in part to like kind of tell him that, but also that like I was trying to work out whether if he was going to come to my Debs, so the Debs is like, I guess like prom. I think that's kind of the closest, isn't it? And because I'd asked him kind of weeks before and he hadn't responded, and so I was kind of ringing him, and then so I rang his house, I think, actually, and his brother answered and was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm sorry, he's packing the car to go to Galway, yeah, he'll get back to you. And then I was like, oh, right, okay, yeah. And then 2 days later, still had heard nothing from him. And then, so I sent him a text being like, where are you at? Or like, well, I don't remember. And then still nothing, and kind of woke up to like a text message on the Thursday, I think, which was said something like, oh, sorry, I can't come to your Debs. Have a great time. And that was it. And it was just kind of, you know, when you just have that moment of like, yeah, okay, right, yeah, no, he doesn't care. And that's I think
horrible. Yeah. What a horrible thing to do, huh?
Yeah, just careless.
And had he sort of been, you know, I you told me about the beginning of the relationship and how that came about, but had you kind of integrated him into your friendship circle over that period of a couple of years, or was he always kind of on the outside a little bit, sort of kind a of different always, part of your life?
Kind of, I think, kind of always on the outside. You know, kind of, it was one of those, like, I kind of tried to kind of integrate him, but he lived on the other side of, he lived in North Dublin. So in that sense, it was kind of hard, and we went to a different school. So in that sense, it was kind of harder because we wouldn't have had necessarily many kind of mutual meeting points, kind of natural kind of meeting points. It was kind of one of those funny things that I think we very much got on and were talking a lot more when we were just friends, like before we started in a relationship as it was. So like, you know, as I said, now I would never ever put up with that. But you know, I suppose I took from it that, you know, I would never put up with that myself, but that also I would never treat somebody in that way, and that, you know, if I ever kind of felt that I was doing that, I would kind of try and assess and kind of, you know, like, right, okay, well, if this is happening, then, you know, what does it mean? And kind of try, yeah, it's just, you know, I know how awful it is to be in that limbo of kind of not knowing where you're at and kind of or, you know.
And where did the friendship group weigh in on all of this?
It was just quite separate,
was it?
Yeah.
Did you keep your your ups and downs about it quite private then while it was all going on?
Not really. I think, you know, with I'd have talked to about it with Jenna, but I think, you know, it's one of those things where as much as she would have very much, I think, disapproved of the way he treated me, there's only so much you can kind of say to somebody if they're not willing to see it. I think she just kind of let it be. But he was very much kind of a separate kind of
part of your life.
And
were you having a sexual relationship with him?
No. Mm. No. And I don't think I would have been ready for it to be like, that's where I'm kind of wondering, like, how much of it was my own self-consciousness about the fact that I was 16 and never been kissed and all of that. I don't know that I really even don't know that boys really occurred to me in that way for a very long time. Maybe
so it's
even
more like feeling like you should have somebody hanging around rather than maybe actually desiring it in that way for itself.
Like I don't think I really kind of just kind of came around to that kind of until maybe university. I had
And did you bounce back? Was it did you feel quite damaged for a while? How did you move on?
I was definitely very damaged for a while. I think I was quite numb for kind of almost a year after, which wasn't helped by the fact that, like, as I said, my best friend's father had died, and then kind of a week after that happened, she moved to London to go to university there. And then kind of I think between her kind of spiraling and her grief and then me obviously being in a really kind of awful place as well, we ended up having a really awful fight kind of just before Christmas of that kind of first year. And we didn't speak until kind of the following June, which is that's the longest we've ever gone without speaking to each other ever. I think she messaged me that kind of in that kind of June, kind of just saying like, oh, it's weird not talking to you. And we kind of slowly kind of built back our friendship kind of.
Oh, that was good. That was good that she reached out and that you rekindled it, wasn't it? But I guess so much emotion and pain in that period, and a big change in going to university as well and leaving all your friends behind.
I think where you asked if I reinvented myself going to secondary school, like, no, but definitely when I went to university.
So this is Trinity, was it?
Yes. So this was Trinity, and it was kind of.
So yeah, you must be quite an intellectual achiever then to get a place at Trinity first, to mark that was an achievement, right?
Yes, yeah. It's funny, kind of. I definitely didn't do as well in my leaving cert as I could have. By the time I was finishing school, I think I was just very tired of being in school and very fed up of it and very bored.
We can blame Brian as well, right?
Possibly, but I don't
know. We won't.
I don't think it was really. I think it was just I was so. School just really didn't kind of suit the way I learn, because it's very
rote learning, or
it's very formulaic, like you kind of and the way you learn, like the way you have to pass the exams, like, is like you have to, like, even for the essay questions and a lot of the subjects, you have to answer them in a very formulaic way. Very much doesn't suit the way I think and the way I learn. And so I think. And then obviously, you know, you're in school, and so they're sort of dictating to you what subjects you can do. And I think I was just
you felt bored and constrained by it.
Yeah. And I kind of lost sort of that momentum. I think maybe after my mock exams in the spring. And so kind of by the time I got to kind of the leaving cert, like the actual exams, I really definitely did not study as much as I should have.
But you still got into Trinity, my dear.
Yeah, somehow. I think I got obviously done enough, like, residual kind of, or like kind of, it had enough of it had sunk in that I did do well enough to get enough points, which is kind of the system in Ireland, to get my place in the course that I wanted in Trinity. So I was happy enough with that. I remember kind of going back to do some rechecks on some of my exams. I think I went in because you can check your papers if you think that maybe you deserved a higher mark. And I think I remember going back in, I went back in to check my Irish paper. And do you know, I think I could have probably got that mark bumped up. But I was, at that point, I was a little bit afraid that I was like, I didn't know how the system worked, that like, if I got that mark bumped up, did that mean that I would lose the place that I had and get bumped up to kind of a different course that I'd actually realized I didn't want to do, but I had originally first choice. And so I didn't, but I remember going in with my Irish teacher and opening it, and I'd written like about 4 pages or something, or 4 or 5 pages for the essay question. And that was, she'd spent the last 2 years trying to get me to write longer essays because there was this kind of, I don't know why, but like my school was obsessed with like getting us to write like answer. There was various different questions on it, and one of them is you either write about like the education system or the healthcare system in Ireland, but you're writing about it in Irish. And I just thought, I really just didn't care because it was basically like you just learn kind of bits of vocabulary and like bits of sentences, and then you'd kind of be putting that in. So I think that like the most I ever wrote in any essay that she ever set was kind of about a page and a half, and she was constantly like, you have to write more than this, you need to write more than this. But then kind of for whatever reason, when I got into the exam, I opened the paper and I was kind of glancing down it, and the creative writing question caught my eye, and that was kind of talk about a place that is special to you, or like something along those lines. And so I answered that question instead and got like 4 or 5 pages out of it, as I said. But yeah, I think she nearly cried when we opened the paper and we're looking at it, and she was just like, you've written so much. And I was like, yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
But yeah,
so what was Trinity like when you got there?
It was great. Yeah, I loved it. So it's, you know, it's right in the center of Dublin, and
beautiful campus.
The campus is right, kind of right in the center of Dublin. And I was still living at home, but, and I'd get the train in, but that's not really unusual for Irish students.
You're right.
You know, most of us kind of stay at home unless you decide to go to a university that's the other side of the country. Yeah, it was great. I loved it. Kind of joined the drama society and kind of various other ones, but like drama, like players, was definitely the one that I kind of was most involved with and most heavily involved with through kind of the whole of the 4 years I was there. And it was,
you said, you know,
I suppose it made sense. Like I was studying drama, and then like most of my classmates were in it as well, so we were all kind of doing kind of the theory of it in class, and then actually kind of just being able to put on plays and do it all ourselves in players, because, you know, it's up to you. So we were the ones kind of, some like people could try writing plays or like directing or doing lighting or costume and sound and kind of all of this stuff, and kind of coming together and doing so. Yeah, no, I really loved
Amazing.
It.
Amazing. Sounds fabulous. And you said you completely reinvented yourself. What did that look like?
I suppose, I think it was definitely a conscious choice on my part, in that sense that I just arrived in and introduced myself to people as Steph. And I don't know if it was necessarily like intentional that I wanted to kind of distance myself from kind of secondary school or that kind of thing, But I feel like, you know, it probably was that I just kind of wanted to start fresh. And, you know, I suppose I was aware that, like, I had to start again because, you know, my best friend had gone off to London, so she wasn't going to be there. And then kind of my other friends had mostly all gone to kind of UCD, or kind of were in other, or like people who are wasn't necessarily as close to had kind of were in different courses and stuff. So I think I was just kind of very much aware that I needed to make friends so that I would kind of find people to kind of spend, to kind of have fun, like spend time with and be friends with. So yeah, I think there was that, and then, but it was, in a sense, it was kind of easier, because especially in, like, I think in, you know, in university, it's like very, for the most part, people are doing the course that they're doing because that subject really interests them and that's mm-hmm. what they want to be there. Mm-hmm. So you kind of, you can share that, and you can just be as passionate as you want about the subject that you're doing without kind of that kind of self-consciousness that maybe you might have in school. So I think it was kind of the first kind of time that I could really kind of start maybe to kind of figuring out how to be myself in kind of outside of kind of just my friend group.
Sounds really fabulous and energizing, and yeah, sounds like amazing, like stepping into another world. Yeah. And so was it work hard, play hard at Trinity, to go with yes. the cliches?
yeah, I think so. Especially as kind of we just kind of get involved in like plays and pitching in and helping other people doing their plays.
And what was the like the students in your, you know, in the players and in your different courses that you were doing, was that like quite an international student body, or was it mostly people very similar to those you'd gone to school with or that lived in your area, you know what I mean? Was it quite a different community or not?
I think it was kind of a mix, probably a mix. I mean, you know, as I said, I went to like my school had been an international one, so we did kind of have quite a mix. And then my friends had done what's called the International Baccalaureate instead of the Leaving Cert, because my school offered that as well as the Leaving Cert. So I actually ended up spending a lot more time with kind of the internationals, like the Australians and the Americans and that, than especially in my last few years, than I did any of my kind of fellow kind of mm-hmm. Irish students. But yeah, then university, I think it was kind of that mix of like there were people from kind of much more kind of different backgrounds, that, like, you know, there was a few kind of English students. There was, I remember in our first year we had there was a girl from Finland, I think, there, although she dropped out, I think. We had like Americans, but like they would have been kind of from a much kind of more varied background as opposed to kind of that kind of very kind of middle class South Dublin, kind of North Wicklow kind of environment that my like the school would have been for the most part, except for kind of those few internationals. So in that sense, so yeah, I think it was a really kind of interesting experience to kind of.
Would you still have had to have been quite well off to go to Trinity, or were there people there on scholarships and that kind of thing?
I don't know. I think there are people who do go there on scholarships. I mean, you know, obviously any of the Americans who were there would have, either they were there on massive, massive loans, or like but, you know, then America is quite different in the sense that for them going to university is outrageously expensive anyway. So I think in that sense, they were probably all relatively kind of middle class in that in that sense, because to pay the international fees as well as kind of paying your rent or whatever in Europe, that but I think maybe some of the Irish and English students, they might, I don't think it ever really kind of bothered me or kind of occurred to me in that way. I think there was kind of a much more of a mix, that like there'd have been people from maybe kind of less well-off areas, and yeah, I do know that Trinity, they have like a, I think they call it TAP, like Trinity Access Program, they have
bursaries and things like that,
to kind of try and kind of reach out to kind of and get people from kind of less advantaged kind of areas into university and stuff. I don't know if anyone on my program was like that.
And would it still have been a largely white student body at Trinity? Because Dublin would have been quite mixed ethnically by the late 2000 teens, wouldn't it?
Yes. My courses were still quite white. Like there was a few. There were a few Jewish girls, but that would have been kind of, I think, about as ethnically diverse as my year kind of got in drama. I'm not so sure about French, but I never really kind of bonded with
the French lot. French, you were really bonded with your drama.
Yeah, I think perhaps like the difficulty with the French class was that it was a much bigger year. There were only kind of 30 or 40 of us in drama total in our year, and we had like a practical class kind of workshop where we were kind of like, you have to get to know someone, because if you're like pulling off them and hanging off them and kind of having to kind of create things, so you kind of bond with them in a much different way. But I think also, you know, in French there was a mixture, there wasn't just people who were doing kind of French with kind of drama or whatever, there was like people who were doing French with however
economics or
there were people doing French who were also doing law, so you were in a much bigger kind of mix, and all of you weren't necessarily in this with the same people in every class, so what it was kind of I think harder to kind of get to know. I did kind of, I think, bond with
so just start that again and just say that you did kind of bond with again, so that we can just leave a couple of seconds because we'll edit it.
So I think I did kind of bond with my classmates who did French and French and drama, that certainly one of them, Stacey, we'd have been very close for the kind of the first few years of drama, and then kind of as our different kind of interests kind of diverged a bit more, we kind of drifted a bit. But
is that what happened to people on the drama course, that they sort of started to develop interests in specific areas then, of like you with costume or
where you kind of get, you figure out sort of maybe what your niche is and you kind of get more involved in that, or maybe like there's kind of other kind of clubs or societies that you kind of get more involved in. Kind of as I went on, like in my, I think towards the end of second year, there was a group of people decided to set up a French society, which I got very kind of involved in that. So I was on the committee for that for my final 2 years, kind of helping kind of try and establish it. So I was doing that, and then I was helping with the St. Vincent de Paul Society. They put on a pantomime every year and they got kind of some of the schools, local schools that they worked with, the kids, some of the kids from there would be in the pantomime, doing kind of all of the, some of them playing the main characters and some of them kind of just doing like crowd dances and stuff.
Amazing.
So I got involved with like kind of helping costuming that. So yeah, you kind of, everyone kind of finds their sort of niche, and you kind of fall into working with particular people and kind of, yeah, working towards figuring out where you might want to go after after graduation, I suppose.
And was your social life centered around Trinity, or did you head out into Dublin a lot?
It was kind of quite a lot with Trinity, like particularly with we'd kind of end up having like various events kind of in and around like the kind of different bars and clubs around around Dublin, but yeah, like with players, like we'd, whenever you did a play, you kind of, it would open up on the Monday, kind of, well, I guess the Monday would kind of be a sort of like a open dress rehearsal as such, and then it would run kind of for the rest of the week until the Saturday, either the Saturday afternoon or the Saturday night. And then on the Saturday night, both shows that were running that week would do a get out. So you'd kind of just like rip out all the sets and put them back down in the basement and get all the costumes back down and kind of packed up and kind of ready to go off to wherever they were going. And then after that, you'd all just head out and either go to somebody's flat and have the kind of party there, or just kind of go out and to some pub somewhere. Usually I think it was Doyle's, which was kind of just off College Green, that we ended up going there a lot. That kind of became our haunt, because they had like, I think it was on like Fridays and Saturdays, they had a kind of a night where like the upstairs would sort of turn into a kind of a club, like they'd have a dance floor and a DJ and you didn't have to pay in, so it was easy. You just like sidle in, you'd have like your pints or whatever or your drinks and kind of have a dance. And so yeah, that was kind of where we went quite a lot, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a few pubs that we were kind of our main kind of haunts, all of which I think are now closed.
Oh, that's sad, isn't it? Yeah.
Into hotels or student accommodation or whatever. Yeah, kind of we'd have gone the Long Stone, or there was another one called McTurkle's. And I think they're both
gone.
Both gone.
And were you a big drinker or?
Not really. I didn't really drink at all until I got to university. It just wasn't really, which I think is maybe kind of unusual, but
it's the stereotype of theatre people, isn't it? That there's a lot of alcohol sort of around the whole.
Yeah. But yeah, I wouldn't have said that I was ever kind of a big drinker, but I definitely kind of a lot of drunken nights. But I wouldn't have ever gotten too out of control. Like I'd never, you know, obviously everyone has kind of those few nights where you kind of underestimate or misjudge kind of your intake or your capacity, and you kind of end up a bit worse for the wear. But I never felt comfortable with the idea of not remembering. That, you know, there is kind of a culture of like people will kind of like, oh, I don't remember anything from that, and they'd be talking about this kind of every week, and it made me feel really uncomfortable, the idea that I wouldn't remember my night. That I never wanted that. But yeah, I'd have a few drinks, have a good time, sometimes I'd get drunk, sometimes drunker than I intended, but never out of control, I don't think. Really.
So anything else you wanted to say about your time in Trinity, or where did you want to go next?
I was trying to decide like whether I wanted to be an actor. Like that was originally why I did drama. I thought maybe I wanted to be an actor, and then kind of as I kind of game, yeah, I kind of fell into costume in that way, kind of towards the end of my second year, I think. And then by the time I was kind of third year, I kind of really started trying to costume as many things. And so then kind of by the time I was in fourth year, I was majoring in drama at that point. Because yeah, the way my degree worked is that you kind of did two subjects up to the end of third year, and then you decide which one you want to major in. So I majored in drama, and I kind of did my final exams as such for French at the end of third year. And then, so yeah, I was kind of trying to decide whether I wanted to sort of pursue costume as kind of and go and do kind of proper training in that. I was doing kind of the costume design module that was offered in Trinity at that point, kind of whether I wanted to go and do kind of proper training in that. So I was looking into that, and then but I was also sort of looking into actually the MA that I ended up doing a couple of years ago with the Royal College of Art and the Victoria and Albert Museum in History of Design. I can't even remember how I came across it, but I just remember thinking, you know, really kind of appealed to me the way what they were proposing and kind of the structure of what they were proposing to teach. And so I was kind of torn between these kind of things.
So it was one a practical sort of route and the other was a theoretical academic.
And then I think the answer kind of came where, like, my mum came across this course in Inchicore, which is, it's actually a called a FITAC course. So it's not a degree course. It's kind of like a diploma course. And so it's kind of, I think the qualification is like slightly above what the Leaving Cert is. But it's not at a degree level. But she came across this course anyway, and I was kind of looking into it, and it was, you know, offering to teach kind of making and pattern drafting and kind of art and design and kind of costume history and theatre history and hair and makeup. And it just, and because it was a diploma course, presumably it was a very affordable, it was like €500 per year.
Amazing.
For all of this, and just compared to any of the other courses that I was looking at, and because I was very aware that I didn't necessarily feel confident that, like, my portfolio as such was up to the standard that, like, say the likes of RADA or Central School in London, or like Edinburgh College of Art, that, like, any of those kind of master's kind of courses were looking for in terms of portfolio. Like, the word portfolio really just kind of it sounded really scary to me. So initially I applied to Inchicore with the thought that, like, oh well, I'll do the first year, and then through doing that, I'll have built up something of a portfolio, and I can use that and apply to one of these other courses. And so I was also quite nervous about the idea of kind of learning making. I was like, oh, I don't know what kind of standard. So I ended up doing between my finishing Trinity and starting that at Inchicore, I ended up doing a course at the Grafton Academy, which is a fashion design school in Dublin. And so I ended up doing kind of a dressmaking course with them through the summer. As it turns out, I didn't need to, because with Inchicore, we literally, it didn't matter how much of a skill level, because there was a real kind of wide variety. There was a few women there who'd been dressmaking for years. And there was some of us who'd, like, never touched a sewing machine, some people who'd never touched a sewing machine in their lives. Mm-hmm. So their approach was to just kind of start at the beginning.
Yeah.
And no matter what your skill was, and just work from there, and kind of like, this is how you do a straight stitch, this is how you do this seam, this is how you do that, which was really good, I think, you know, because obviously, like, especially if you're self-taught with sewing, you might have kind of bad habits, or like maybe you kind of do things and suddenly you're like, oh, this is a much easier way of doing the thing that. I ended up applying for that and kind of let the MA, the History of Design MA, kind of drop, and I was like, right, okay, this is what I'll do. So I applied for that, and I went for the interview, and I got in, and as I said, I did the Grafton course, and then I got into Inchicore. And then I think once I was there, I loved it so much.
Did you?
And the
girls teaching or the people there, or
yeah, the teaching, and then it was really, really full on. Like, we were in like full time, like 5 days a week, kind of probably about like 5 hours a day. And then like after that you'd have loads of assignments. And then I was working as well part time in Penny's, or Primark as it is over in the UK. So it was no time for kind of anything else. But I really loved it, and the girls on my course were just amazing. Like, we really just all really bonded. Our head of the course, she was laughing at us kind of in the second year. She was just like, I remember, she was like, those first few weeks kind of like that first month, she was like, you all were just so kind of just like wary and kind of sizing each other up. And she's like, and then, you know, for like after Halloween, you all just kind of like clicked, and we were like, we'll just not tell her that we got really drunk in the sewing room and like had pizzas and like went on a night out, because it was like rule number one, no food in the sewing
room. Ah, yes, that would be the cardinal sin of the sewing room.
It's like there was a kettle in there, and we almost immediately just kind of obviously started a tea round. And she was like, you know, you're the first lot that has ever done that. And we were like, what do you mean? It's a kettle. Of course we're going to make tea. She's like, no, like, we use that kettle to boil water for dyeing things. And we were just, we're all just looking at her being like, yeah, but it's
need
a kettle.
Tea.
Like, tea, obviously. So it must have just been like whatever combination of us that were there that like we all just got on really well. Because the year ahead of us hated each other. Like, they were like,
oh, right.
Very,
so
yeah, they
weird.
Were they were all kind of very kind of divided up and mm-hmm. like in their little kind of groups, whereas we were kind of like a whole, just like all 13 of us just kind of
so was that a year's course or
two years
or a year?
Two years. Yeah.
And so very different from Trinity and full on practical hard work. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, very much so.
Wasn't it great that you loved it though? It was really the right choice.
Yeah, it was really good, and we're all kind of, well, most of us are kind of all still in touch. That we kind
and were
of
there people for. On that course for all sorts of different reasons, Steph?
Yes, yeah. You know, there was people on that course that like there was one woman, Jinan, who, well, she kind of came back in. She came in our second year. I think she'd done the first year a few years before. She's hilarious. She's it's a hilarious Iraqi woman, and she's a kind of a fashion designer and dressmaker, and she had her own company and kind of been working in Dublin for years, but I think she just kind of wanted like that qualification so that she could say like, I have this qualification in costume. I think she'd made like a lot of kind of Irish dancing costumes for people as well, and stuff. So she was kind of there that she wanted this kind of qualification so she could put it on her CV, I presume. Mm-hmm. I think and then kind of the same, I think, for there was a, I can't remember if she was Hungarian or where she was, but she was also definitely a qualified dressmaker. She was like, she was amazing. And I think maybe she wanted that kind of qualification as well, that kind of thing that you can say like, oh no, you know, like a recognizable kind of thing, like, oh, I did this course at like Inchicore and da 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 da, because the course had been going for 20 years, so it's kind of quite. And then I think maybe she wanted to also kind of get into like costume making, and it's sort of like, well, if I do that, it's a way in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also kind of helps sort of in terms of like improving English for that girl Jurgita. Yeah, there was some people who were kind of retraining or reskilling. And then there was a couple of girls like me who'd kind of gone through university and had decided like, oh, this looks like kind of an interesting kind of direction to go in. And then there was a couple of girls, one of whom kind of dropped out. She realized it wasn't for her very much. So a couple of girls who literally just left school. They were kind of about 17. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that one girl, she ended up dropping out. I think she realized that she went off to become a paramedic, actually. which we were like, definite shift. But yeah, she seemed a lot happier kind of when, because she actually did the paramedic course at the, which the college, the Inchicore offered. So she seemed a lot happier when we saw her the next year. But yeah, and then the other girl, Jade, who I'm still friends with now. She was very much kind of our course baby, like kind of the, we all kind of, I think we all kind of became like surrogate sisters to her.
Aww, or big sisters.
Mammies kind of in a way.
Sounds lovely.
She kind of, I don't think she necessarily knew kind of what she wanted to do, but like, I don't even know how she picked the course, but yeah, she came on and she did it. And then, yeah, I think she's gone back. She went off and kind of traveled for kind of a few years, but I think she's gone back to study arts management now. So,
great.
Yeah, she's kind of, kind of figured out her way. But yeah, so there was a huge mix.
What was your kind of social scene when you'd moved to Inchicore? Because you'd been in with the Trinity crowd and very much sort of hanging out with your drama buddies there for the 4 years at Trinity.
Yeah, it was kind of, well, because I didn't really have much time for,
yeah,
kind of,
you were working very hard.
We kind of mostly just hung out with each other, I suppose. And like, we'd be in class in the mornings until maybe like 12 or 1 o'clock, and then quite often we just stay and kind of work away in the studio, like the sewing studio or a sewing room, to be doing our coursework or whatever, and we'd be kind of work together and be helping each other out. And so that was kind of, I suppose, the social scene then. And then, you know, every so often I might go out with people from work, from Penny's, that I made kind of a few friends there as well. So there'd be kind of every so often just like a work night out, and we'd kind of go to the pub that we, because I was working in the one in Dundrum. And so we'd end up, there was a kind of a pub kind of in Dundrum Village that was kind of the place that, you know, we just went for work nights out, where you kind of start there and then go on and head up to the tram or whatever, to the Lewis, and head into Dublin from there, or get taxis or whatever, or go back to somebody's house and or flat or whatever. So that was kind of, yeah, the social scene. And then every so often I'd kind of maybe meet up with whatever friends from Trinity that were left. Because I suppose the difficulty with that was that a lot of people kind of went on to like to do further studies abroad, or they went back home. That kind of, especially the friends that I had.
So were you involved in any drama groups or theatrical productions while you were at Inchicore?
I volunteered with in the Dublin Fringe Festival with there was this aerial dance company, so I kind of helped out making the costumes for them. Kind of, that would have been around kind of 2013, kind of that kind of summer, autumn. And then in my final year at Inchicore, I designed and made the costumes for a theatre production that went up in Smock Alley Theatre, which was kind of a devised piece, which I think the girl who was doing it, directing it, had been in Trinity as well. I can't even remember how I got involved.
Yeah, with you, it kind of, like, kept your hand in a little bit.
Yeah, like I feel like maybe it was something that she'd posted, that she was looking for somebody on Facebook or something like that. Because I hadn't known her in Trinity. It's just kind of, but yeah, kind of, or like maybe she'd posted on some forum somewhere that she was looking for a costume designer, and I got in. Yeah, and then kind of just after I finished, I designed the costumes for a production in the Project Arts Centre of Timon of Athens. And then through that, I got put in touch with another director who was putting on another Shakespeare play pretty much just after that, in the Ivy Gardens of Much Ado About Nothing. So I did that as well. And then, yeah, so, and then after that, I got work experience on a film on Sing Street. And I was kind of did a few weeks on that. And then, so that was kind of after I graduated. That I got through our pattern drafting tutor, actually, because she works for RTE. So I think she had like contacts, and she kind of, they in Shakur were quite good at like trying to get each person who graduated like at least one kind of placement, and then kind
that's great. That was kind
of up to you to kind of build your contacts and
yes,
and kind of be doing that. And then kind of towards October of that year, so that would be in 2014, I had written to a costume rental company over here in the UK called Angels. I think I'd written to them around the time, like in May, kind of around the time I was finishing up, kind of asking about work experience or internships or potential work. And they just got back to me at that time saying that they didn't have anything, sorry. And then kind of around kind of the end of October, start of November, I got an email from them asking if I was still interested, and that they had a few internships coming up, and would I be interested in coming over for an interview? So I did.
How did you feel?
Yeah, it was great. I was actually working nights in Penny's at that stage. Because, well, you got paid a lot because they had a night shift kind of over the Christmas period, which started kind of in October, November. And it paid kind of, you got paid extra for working on sociable hours. So I'd kind of been like, right, well, I'll do this and I'll save up like all this money, and then I'll be able to kind of properly kind of get into film and stuff. So I think I must have finished my shift on the Sunday morning, and I think I flew over to the UK on the Monday, maybe, because I must have had my, or maybe, yeah, I can't remember when I had my interview, but I flew over anyway because at that stage Jenna and I were kind of much, much better place and stuff. So I came over just kind of partly to see her and spend time with her, and then also do this interview. And so I went in. It was really nice. It was quite an informal chat, and kind of basically they told me the next day that I'd got, the internship. And so that was due to start the following March. And so I kind of chatted to my mom about like, oh, you know, I've got this internship, and where she was like, right, well, you know, we're kind of working out how I was going to afford living because it's an internship. So they weren't paying anything.
Yeah.
They were going to pay travel expenses while I was doing the internship. So I wasn't going to have to worry about kind of tube journeys and that kind of thing. But yeah, it was kind of a matter of where I would live and kind of how I'd afford that. But my aunt, my mum's sister, she lives over in the UK in and around Balham. So I kind of got in touch with her, and she said, yes, that's absolutely fine, you can come and stay with me. So that's what I did.
Wow, exciting.
I handed in my notice to Penny's in kind of January, and then finished up there kind of a few days before I was due to come over here. And then so I came over and did the internship, and then yeah, I just decided to stay.
So before you go on to why you decided to stay, how did you feel about leaving? I mean, were you scared, sad to leave certain people behind, anxious? How did you feel? Excited?
I was very excited. I think because when I initially came over for the internship, I don't think it necessarily occurred to me that I was moving permanently. It was very much kind of a really exciting thing because the company is like they're really big, kind of quite a prestigious one of the mainstays of costume rental. So I think I was very excited kind of about like the experience I was going to get, and like hopeful for like where it might take me, mm-hmm. and all of that. and kind of, yeah, kind of taking that next step in my career. And yeah, I think that was kind of the main, main kind of feelings. Yeah. Excitement and kind of.
And how did your mum feel about her daughter going?
I think she was, yeah, she was like my, I think my parents were always quite, I remember having a conversation with my dad at some point that like he was very much of the opinion that at some point at least one of us would end up leaving Ireland, and kind of, you know, that like it might be kind of prove kind of too small or whatever, or that like our ambitions would
take us
out. So I think they were quite excited about us. They've always been really like incredibly supportive of us in kind of whatever we wanted to do, and kind of if there's ever been anything that we've wanted to do, they've generally kind of helped us find a way to make it happen. Like if it means kind of getting in touch with their friends or like their contacts and kind of being like, this is what, you know, Stephanie or Tim or Ills want to do, and
lovely,
do you know anybody? And so yeah, it was kind of in that sense, like they, yeah, they're really, really supportive and kind of very much kind of like, okay, right, this is what you want to do, how are we going to make it happen?
And did it help that Jenna was in London, or in terms of having someone, you know, because often that's the thing that makes people anxious about leaving friends and making a new network, that sort of thing?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, the fact that, yeah, my best friend was here, and then also like I was going to stay with my aunt. Like I didn't really know her that well at the time, but like it is that kind of comforting thing of like, well, I'm going to my auntie, and then my cousins on my dad's side, they live here, my first cousins. And so like I wasn't necessarily like really close to them, but like I do like a kind of, they had they did used to come back and to Ireland and visit during the summers when we were kids, and they're a bit older than me. And then kind of when I kind of moved over, they kind of basically just adopted me, and kind of,
lovely,
sort of just took me in and kind of involved me and in kind of their kind of get whenever they kind of would get together and be doing things. And my eldest cousin Pete and his wife, they were about to have a baby when I moved over, so I kind of ended up being quite involved with her. Like I've ended up being quite involved with Alex, and then I'm kind of godmother to her younger sister now as well. So
lovely.
Yeah, it's kind of quite, in that sense I think it was much easier for me maybe than necessarily other people, and that like UK didn't feel strange or like foreign or kind of far away in that sense, because I had like family, I had friends, I had that kind of support network always already there. And so it kind of was quite easy, like it was more about kind of getting to know the geography more so than kind of trying to forge kind of any kind of social networks from scratch.
So the internship went well?
Yes, yeah, it did. It went well. It was at the time I was kind of a bit disappointed in the sense that like there had been two internships, and there'd been one that had happened just before my one. And that girl, the girl who did that, actually got kept on because there had been a vacancy. And so I think basically the internships were sort of almost like an audition. But so she ended up getting kept, and I didn't. But you know, I didn't resent her in any way. It was just kind of one of those like, oh, like
damn, yeah,
darn. Like if I'd been able to do that first one, then maybe that would have been me. But yeah, so we, you know, kind of made kind of friends with her. And we kind of still are sort of in touch, and we'd meet up every so often. And so I finished off the internship anyway, and I wasn't really sure what I was going to do. I didn't really have anything lined up, but I think I kind of, in my mind, I was afraid that if I went home to Ireland, that I'd fall back into, that it would be just very easy to walk back into my job in pennies.
Mm.
And I was a little bit afraid of doing that. I didn't want to take the easy way out, I suppose. It felt too easy to kind of like, I'll just go home and then I'll end up back in my comfort zone.
Mm.
And so I was like, well, you know, if I don't have anything lined up, I might as well kind of try and make a go of it in London. So I looked around and I got a job in a fabric and haberdashery store in Soho. And I ended up working there for the summer. And I did work experience with Opera Holland Park while I was there. And then towards the end of the summer, kind of around September time, my supervisor at the internship, he kind of got back in touch and was like, oh, well, would you like to, we've got somebody, one of the girls who had, somebody had left. And so he was like, oh, well, will you come back and kind of cover the vacancy while we're sort of looking for somebody? And initially that was supposed to be for 3 months, but they ended up kind of finding somebody and kind of basically gave me my marching orders after a month, which I was a little annoyed about because I'd basically quit this job on the premise that I'd have worked for 3 months. And I felt like it was awkward because I didn't have time to work out my notice either. So I'd kind of, I felt like maybe I'd kind of burned bridges in that
sense.
Yes.
Oh, that was tough.
So I thought that was very naughty of them. I worked there for the month and kind of a month and a half, because I ended up helping out in the workrooms for another kind of couple of weeks after, and then I was unemployed.
Ooh, scary.
Yeah, which was very scary.
But still at your aunt's?
Found a house share that I'd moved in there kind of in August time. But yeah, it was quite scary being unemployed. It was really, because it was the first time that, it was very much the first time that I didn't really have any direction. I didn't really know what my next step would be, or kind of how to proceed. Like up to that point, I'd always kind of had a plan, even if it wasn't like a long-term plan. It was one that like, okay, right, well, I'll do this and this will kind of. So I was just kind of casting about, and I was unemployed for about November, December, and then in December there was a post went up on one of the Facebook groups, the costume Facebook groups. Somebody was looking for like a runner or like a PA, costume PA, and so I applied for that. And the supervisor, she got back to me and she said, like, I've had a look at your CV and I've chatted to Richard at Angels, and I think actually you'd be better suited to having a slightly better role, but like, she's like, I want to offer you this job. But yeah, so basically I got a job on her job, but like it was better than the one I applied for, which was really great. And it had come through that kind of internship and then going back for the month.
Great.
So yeah, it was kind of one of those things that it worked out, like even if it didn't work out the way I hoped it would initially, it still kind of, things kind of fell into place. So I went home for Christmas and then I came back and I started that job on kind of the start of January, like 4th of January. And
what year are we in now, Steph?
So that would be 2016, I think, start of 2016.
And what age are you then?
I would be 25 and a half. 25. I'm trying to remember. But kind of even as I was starting that job, at that point, I'd sort of decided that I quite fancied the idea of going back and doing that MA. Now that I'd been looking back, all the way back in my BA. So I was sort of applying for that, kind of being like, oh, I don't know, like I'll just see how I get on. And then I ended up getting in, and then once I got in, I was like, well, you know, maybe I'll just do it, and kind of in the sense, because it was a two-year MA, so I think kind of in my mind I was like, well, it's a long time, and once I get into the kind of the swing of working, I felt like it would be a lot harder to sort of
step out
for 2 whole years and then go back in. So I was like, well, you know, might as well do it now at the start before I've kind of really kind of got into the swing of it. So yeah, I did.
And how did you fund that?
I got a postgraduate loan. I had some, I still had some savings from when I'd worked those nights in Pennies. And
quite a determined individual, aren't you?
Yeah,
you are.
Just kind of find, well, I think it's just that, I think it's where, like, yeah, I think it helps that, you know, my parents are always kind of like, no, we'll find a way, like, don't.
No, but you're very hard working and determined, and you put in a really solid foundation for your career in terms of the choices you've made, haven't you, really?
Yeah.
So where was the, I know you said it was the V&A, and was it Holloway and the V&A?
It's in South Kensington.
So were you based there?
The Royal College of Art.
And you were based there, going there every day, or?
Yes, yeah. So you get partly taught by staff from the Royal College of Art, and then partly taught by staff from the research department in the V&A.
What a privilege.
Yeah, it's a really, I really loved it. Like, 'cause you get classed as a volunteer within the V&A, so you kind of get involved with various projects that are going on, like research projects, and kind of helping out in kind of archives and stuff. I ended up doing kind of a month with the theatre and performance department, kind of between my first and second year. I was doing a few weeks on the V&A Dundee, where they were kind of doing research and kind of figuring out what bits and pieces from their collections could kind of go up there for that, where that was kind of being prepped for opening.
Amazing.
And yeah, it was really interesting.
Mm. What an opportunity. And then we're kind of past our age range, but I'm really interested in, you know, the course, when the course finished, and your subsequent career. Is that a sort of, was that easy to get back into, having finished the 2 year MA?
Yeah, funnily enough, it was strangely kind of, everything kind of started falling into place almost.
I
was working, I got a job at Selfridges before the MA. That was kind of partially also how I kind of afforded to live. So I was kind of working there part time. In women's wear, and kind
nice.
Of like in the third floor, there was like they were opening up a new kind of it was like a department where they were kind of doing like kind of new kind of like avant-garde sort of designers. Not like haute couture, that, because that's like more like the second floor, that would be kind of, it was more kind of, yeah, like the young kind of fresh, yeah, kind of nice, up-and-coming designers, that like kind of idea. So I got a job in that, which was really, it was quite fun.
I'm a department store freak, so love department store. So that's, yeah, like my dream job.
Yeah, it's a really mad environment in Selfridges, because it's a department store, but at the same time they kind of, it's almost like because they have different sort of seasons, and they're like have kind of like, they'll organize events, and kind of at one point they had, while I was there, they had like a Shakespeare themed season, so they were having students from one of the universities come in and do Shakespeare scene, like just pop up Shakespeare scenes through the store, and like they had kind of various designers that they kind of sold, who like whose kind of stuff that they sold in the store, they were like, oh, will you design like a special Shakespeare themed line? So they had, yeah, it was kind of, it's quite mad. So yeah, kind of I was working there. And so by when I was finishing up my degree, the MA, at that point, I was sort of torn between whether I wanted to kind of get into museums or kind of continue on with costuming. And it was almost kind of a, well, I'll see which works out first, sort of thing. But as, you know, the costuming worked out first, I ended up doing a couple of weeks. I went back and did kind of freelanced for a few weeks at Angels for them in the summer. And then there was a costume conference, like costume history kind of studies conference at the Guildford School of Acting called Critical Costume. And I did like a kind of a flash talk at that. And then through that, I kind of got chatting with their costume department there. And so I said, like, you know, I'd be up for doing kind of freelance work for them and that. So through them, I ended up doing a few weeks on them. And then another friend of mine who I'd worked with, or, well, we weren't really even friends at that point. It's kind of like a girl that I'd known through a few days of work that I'd done on a film at some point. I ran into her, I think she'd come in into Selfridges, like doing kind of shop returns or something for the, and we were kind of got chatting, and she was like, oh, well, you know, we might have dailies on the job that she was doing. And I was like, well, you know, give me a text, because I, you know, I'd be up for that. And so, yeah, basically I kind of ended up getting onto that kind of fit onto that job with her. And so kind of a transition, kind of, I did like a few weeks with Angels and then a few weeks with down at Guildford, and then kind of got onto this job, which was initially only going to be a week while she was away on holiday. And then I just ended up being kept on with that film. So I kind of had just taken I'd quit Selfridges kind of at some point in the middle of that, and I applied for kind of a trainee program with Screen Skills, I think they call themselves. And so I applied for that while I was kind of in the meantime, and I ended up getting onto that, so that started kind of the spring of 2019. And so they kind of find sort of paid placements for you on different productions. I think I'd applied for the TV one. And so, yeah, I ended up with two placements out of that kind of jobs. And then, yeah, kind of just, and in the meantime, I'd somehow ended up working as the costume supervisor for down in Eton College in Eton, which was a very strange, literally, I think I was only supposed to be going there to be helping out with some alterations or something. And then basically their costume supervisor quit, and I'd never worked for them. I don't think they'd even ever seen my CV, but they just called me up and were like, oh, well, would you actually just be willing to come and cover this vacancy for the rest of the school term? And I was like, yeah, sure. Okay. I can do that.
So then you ended up in the weird and wonderful world of Eton.
Yes. Yeah. Which was, I mean, I think it's as close to working in Hogwarts as I'll ever come. It was it's a very odd kind of environment.
Mm-hmm. And now do you freelance, Steph?
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I've kind of ended up freelancing. And yeah, it's kind of getting into, yeah, I definitely kind of got into the swing of it with like the way it works with film is that it's just mostly word of mouth and kind of getting in touch with somebody and being like, oh, hi, I'm free at the moment. Like, if you're needing anybody on a job, yeah, you just kind of have to.
So you have to be quite confident then to do that. And
yeah, it's kind of a tricky one to sort of get into the swing of. But it's kind of, it gets easier once you've worked for people like a few times, or like if you've worked for them for like a few weeks or a few months, where like you, so you kind of feel like you've kind of got to know them a little bit. And then also just kind of knowing that like that's just how it is, that's just kind of that they're like, that it's almost helpful for them sometimes, for people sometimes, if you just kind of give them a message and be like, oh, hi, like, how are you? Like, long time no see, I've been doing X, Y, and Z, I hope you're well. If you're looking for anybody in the next while, I'm free, would love to come and work with you again, so yeah, it's quite good fun. I've kind of ended up on my current job is really nice. I'm working for a supervisor that I've done kind of like bits and pieces for him before, but like this one I'm actually kind of on the whole job, so it'll be nice.
So we're probably coming near the end of our interview. I'm going to ask you in a minute if there are other things that you would like to talk about, but I suppose one of the questions I want to end with, so just planting the seed, is, you know, how do you think about Ireland now? How would you describe your relationship to Ireland now? But before we get to that, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about today that's been important to you from the ages of 15 to about 25?
I don't know. I think it's mostly that I was just kind of, yeah, just figuring out kind of what I wanted to do and making that happen, I guess, and kind of, yeah, that, like, I think that's mostly kind of what those ages were, of like kind of figuring out what I wanted to do, and then kind of with, I guess, with my life as such. And then once I'd done that, kind of figuring out how to make that happen. I think, yeah, that's kind of mostly where my mind was at, where my head was at for those years.
Yeah, and you've really done that with such determination. So how would you describe your relationship to Ireland then, now?
Well, I miss it a lot. I don't know how much of that is to do with I've not been home since Christmas 2019. With COVID.
We should just say COVID in case someone years from now has forgotten the momentous year and more that we've been through just now, eh?
Yes, yeah. So usually I'd go home at least twice a year. I'd go home for kind of, when I was doing my MA, I was only able to get home for maybe a few days, where I'd just bully Selfridges into rearranging my work schedule. Which basically was just me telling them, like, well, I'm just not going to be here. I'm going home for Christmas. So that's that. But usually I'd go home for maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, depending how much time I can get off around Christmas. And then again, I'd go home for maybe a week or so in the summer when I can. But yeah, I've not been home since Christmas 2019 now. And yeah, I think as the years have kind of gone, I do miss it. I'd like to go home at some point if I can figure out a way of doing that. I don't think I want to go home until I'm like kind of maybe properly, more kind of properly established in my career, so that I can kind of, because I feel like, I think my problem, I suppose with Ireland is that it is very small, and the industry as well is still kind of relatively small. It's kind of that, like, it can be, I think, a bit incestuous and a little bit more kind of papaled, let their kind of, it's I mean, it happens in the UK industry as well, because like the film industry is very much kind of on a unofficial sort of word of mouth. You work for people because they like you and mm-hmm. they remember you, and they're like, oh, I like working with so-and-so, I'll get them on this. Mm-hmm. And it's so much less kind of official kind of applying for jobs. But I think, you know, that's slightly easier in the UK because it's so much bigger. And even within London, you'll have kind of different circles and networks. Whereas I think in Ireland, those networks are much smaller. And so it's kind of, yeah, if there's any grudges and you're like, oh, you've worked for so-and-so, then they'll be like, oh, well, I'm not, you know. So in that sense, I think it was, that's kind of something I always found hard about Ireland, that like if you don't fit in, it's very hard to make a break of it and mm-hmm. kind of get kind of higher. Like if you're not kind of in with whoever it is at the next level, then you're just not going to be able to kind of step up. So I think people kind of end up stuck kind of on lower rungs for kind of a longer time. But I think, you know, I think things are changing now. Like I know there's more studios that have been built in the time that, like, since I've been away, and that are being built. I know there's a new one that's being built near to where my parents are. I mean, quite a lot of the filming is kind of concentrated in and around near where my parents are anyway, because there's like Ardmore Studios in Bray, which is quite close to us, and then there's some other studios down in Arklow where they did the Vikings, so they're there, and then I think they're building some more in Greystones now as well. But there's also a few that have opened up in the west of Ireland as well. So I think with like kind of this growth of like all of these streaming platforms, and there's just so much content needed and being made, and yeah, in order to kind of facilitate that, I think maybe hopefully things will sort of open up a bit more. That
so would that be your aim then, to maybe be able to base yourself in Ireland again in the future and work from Ireland?
Yeah, I think I'd like that. Like I have, it's kind of it is a thing. Like I think, especially if I ever got round to kind of wanting to settle down and have a family, I think I prefer to have raise children in Ireland, kind of even just to be kind of closer to my parents. But yeah, I don't think I'd necessarily want to kind of raise a family over in London, or yeah, I think it's for me, yeah, I think I'd like to move home at some point if I can. Yeah, work out how that works. Not like it's not anytime soon or necessarily or in the next few years, but I think ultimately it would be nice to go home.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you for two fabulous hours of talking. It's been brilliant. It goes quickly, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
And I'm just going to leave a bit of silence before I stop recording. And after I stop recording, do not close your browser, okay? Because that's really important with Zencastr.